Back to the Midday Grind with Martin and Marlo on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
And will I declare, have you seen the light? Their walls are built of cannonballs. Their motto is, don't tread on me. Come hear Uncle John's band playing to the tide. Come with me or go alone.
102 here in St. Louis on 590 The Fan. Martin and Charlie here till 3. Line change comes your way from 3 until 6. Cam Jansen's been out for like a month. He's on some kind of extended cruise.
Boat trip.
Must be nice.
Looks like fun.
Knows all the right people. The line change coming your way at 3 o'clock right here on KFNS right now. We welcome to the program New York Magazine contributing editor David Marchese, who wrote this fascinating, conducted this fascinating Q&A with a guy we've all heard of named David Letterman. We just haven't seen him in a while, and the picture may have been as gripping as the piece itself. David, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It seems to me that the photo of a bearded Letterman has gotten as much attention as anything he said.
Yeah, I think, you know, somebody who for 30 years we saw 5 nights a week clean-shaven, and to see just in the relatively short time since he's been off the air how much he's changed, I think, was pretty fun and surprising for everyone.
What was the circumstance in lining up the interview? How difficult was it to, I mean, because over the years he didn't do a lot of media, and now he's been out of the game for a while. How did you go about getting the actual interview?
You know, it's funny because a couple of people have asked me this question, and I wish I had a more exciting answer. I think he maybe was eager to talk, because it was literally as simple as my boss, my editor, emailed his publicist and asked, and they said yes. And as far as I know, that was the extent of it.
Now, had you interviewed him before? Because I've always gotten the sense, and talking to people who have been on his show, that he can be rather intimidating. Did you have any exchanges prior to this?
No, I'd never met him before, never interviewed him before. I had the same sense that you did, that he, you know, from watching his interviews on his show for so many years, he can be a little bit prickly, but in person he was charming, gentlemanly, and really, really easy to talk to.
David, I read the article. Did you get a sense that he was kind of bored and maybe not doing a late night show for a year or so? He kind of wanted to get back into doing something. He seemed like he really wanted to talk a lot, which again kind of goes against what you always hear about David Letterman and doing interviews.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. You know, I don't know if I would put it as bored. Maybe more that he just missed doing what he did for so many years. You know, he had a national forum to talk to the country 5 nights a week for years and years and years, and then suddenly that's gone. I think he's somebody who pays close attention to the news, who has interesting thoughts about things, and I think he was just eager and hungry for the opportunity to share those thoughts.
And it seemed like all you had to do was say Donald Trump, and he just went, and he couldn't stop. Is that fair?
I suspect at least 50% of the reason he probably wanted to do this was to talk about Donald Trump and share his opinions about that. It did not take much prodding from me.
And for our audience, if they haven't had a chance to check it out yet, vulture.com, and again, David's with New York Magazine. Give us sort of the breakdown for those who didn't read. It's an extensive, I joked, I said, if you have a lunch hour, it'll take a little longer than that. It's extensive. Give our audience, though, sort of the Trump view from Letterman.
Well, I think it's interesting because he's, as he says in the piece, he's somebody who had Donald Trump on his show pretty big handful of times over the years, from the 80s up till about 2015 or so. So he really had a long relationship with him and saw him change from a guy who was basically just thought of as kind of a New York real estate businessman to the figure he is now, or approaching the figure he is now. And I think, you know, Dave probably, it's fair to say, was not particularly happy with sort of Trump's evolution and kind of just thinks of him in the most negative terms, rightly or wrongly, you know, as somebody who, you know, lies and doesn't tell the truth and you know, suggests only half playfully that, you know, is sort of put in place by the Russians. I mean, I don't think he could have a lower opinion of Donald Trump.
I think Dave, he said he was doughy back in the day, and he said, basically said he would have him on to kind of make fun of him, and he said the man never had a retort. But then you tied it in. You said maybe the Russians were behind Dave's own personal blackmail, which led to him being off the air. He seemed to bite on that. He liked that.
Oh, I just think it was such an outlandish statement. And really, you know, I think in the exchange before, David had made a joke about Alex Jones conspiracy theories, so I was just sort of making a joke in that vein. But I just think it was such sort of a bonkers thing to say that he was sort of tickled by it.
And interesting, because Letterman, I never thought of him as very political. And then I think towards the end, he got a little more outspoken, where he kind of had a hint of where he stood. And explain that, why he said he never was political, because clearly because of his mentor.
Yeah. Well, Johnny Carson famously is somebody who would never stray too far one way or another politically, and felt very much from a business point of view that the best decision for him was to sort of be in the middle of the road politically. And I think Johnny, as Dave's, you know, the person Dave looked up to, influenced Dave, certainly the early part of Dave's career, and Dave did take sort of that similarly apolitical approach. But then he said, for a lot of reasons, John Stewart coming on the scene changed that for him, and just John's voice was so powerful and so remarked upon that it kind of became, as he put it, the elephant in the room, politics. You know, it was the thing that it became conspicuous if you weren't talking about it. So I think he adapted in that way towards the end of his career.
And David, did you get the sense that he's at peace with when he left The Late Show? And in the interview, he says basically if he was still doing it now, he would talk about Trump so much they'd probably have to, you know, cut him off and edit the show. Does he want to have a platform, you think, still right now with what's going on with Trump, or is he kind of happy with what he's doing?
My sense is that he's happy with what he's doing. I think in sort of a one-off or smaller scale situation, he'd be happy to come back and do other things in the public eye. But, it's my impression that towards the end of the show, you know, he didn't really go to rehearsals. He would just sort of show up for, for the tapings. He, for years, wasn't that involved in the writer's room. I think he did just kind of get bored with the job in some respects. So I don't think he's sitting around thinking, gosh, I retired too early or I really miss what I used to do.
And for a while at the end, didn't he tape two shows on Thursday so he could have a longer weekend?
Yeah, I don't know about that. That sounds about right. I would not be surprised if that were true, but I'm not sure.
And it didn't sound like he had any plans to kind of either mend the fence or at least visit with Jay Leno. His line to you was something about, I'm sure I'll run into him before I die.
Yeah, I got that impression also. You know, I think it's just interesting to think about their history together, because I think in the very early days, when they were both coming up as stand-ups in L.A., they were fairly friendly and would see each other socially. But I think once Jay got The Tonight Show and Dave didn't, I think that did put a distance between them that they'll probably never really bridge.
Yeah, and when you asked who would you want on the set, who is that person you'd want to talk to, I'll be honest, I'm a huge Letterman fan. I probably could have taken 100 stabs at it. And I would have never said Bob Marley. Were you kind of thrown back by that?
I think I'm in the same boat as you. Just the idea of Dave, like, you know, kicking back, listening to One Love or something like that, just sort of seems like a mental image that you can't quite put together. But, he mentioned that he'd read a sort of famous biography of Bob called Catch a Fire by this guy, Timothy White. And Dave mentioned that he'd read that and got fascinated with him and was a fan of the music. So, like you, I think, you know, there were probably about 100 or 200 people, I would have guessed, before he got there. But, you know, it is what it is.
So he mentions he has lunch with Paul Schaefer once a month. You interviewed him in New York. Do we know, does he spend time? Is he still, like, Montana mostly, L.A., New York, Connecticut? What does he do primarily?
I think he spends a fair bit of time in, I'm pretty sure it's Montana. He has a bunch of acres there, and he talked, you know, before we started doing the formal interview, we were just making small talk, and I think he's does a lot of trout fishing down at his place there, and I think he also has a place outside of New York, and, you know, I think he just does kind of, you know, he's got a 13-year-old son, he's got a wife, I think he just does dad stuff, you know, he goes, buys, he talks about having to go buy shoelaces, he talks about going to the bait and tackle shop, you know, he takes business meetings once in a while. I think he's got a pretty relaxed, happy life right now.
David, do you think he'll do something else comedically? You could do a stand-up special, something with a platform like Netflix. In the interview, he mentioned a comedian drinking coffee in cars, whatever it is, with Jerry Seinfeld, something like that. Do you see him doing a new project?
Oh, I'm pretty sure he will. It's my sense also that he's taken a lot of meetings with people and talking with people about what the possibilities might be for somebody like him. So I do think he's looking to see what the next move might be. And I think he's interested in the idea that it doesn't have to necessarily be this big network TV show. He could come back with, you know, a Netflix special or something that's, you know, just online or a one-off in-person show. So I think given the range of possibilities that are out there and clearly the interest people still have in him, I'd be really surprised if he didn't do something else in the not-too-distant future.
He seemed pretty insistent that he doesn't watch Colbert, he doesn't watch late-night TV, he joked that it's past his bedtime. Do you think that's just sort of a safe way to not critique the guy that's followed him, or do you think he really doesn't watch?
You know, I think it's tempting to think it's a way of not talking about Colbert, but I believe him when he says he just did it for so long that, you know, he just doesn't really have an interest in watching other people do it. You know, I think maybe a comparison can be made with professional athletes or something. It's not necessarily the case that somebody who was a professional baseball player for 20 years or something, once they retire, wants to come back to the ballpark every day or spend a lot of time at home watching baseball. You know, I think that would be understandable, and I think his position is maybe similar to looking at it that way.
David Marchese, contributing editor, New York Magazine. You can also find his interview with David Letterman at Vulture.com. I knew you were a fan and had been a fan, or at least very familiar with the show, when you dropped a Harvey Pekar reference, because in reading it, and I wasn't sitting there, but the reaction from Dave seemed to be, oh my God, that's a name I haven't heard in 1,000 years. And if you had to describe to our audience Harvey Pekar, I don't know that I even could. He was a Cleveland guy. I guess he was a comic, but he would come on. He was the only guy. He really would stick it to Dave, and I guess that was the bit. Or do we think Harvey was always disgusted with Dave? He told him he was a sellout. Remember that the exchanges were classic for a guy like Dave who always has the upper hand.
Yeah. I would definitely recommend to anybody who's interested, if you just go on YouTube and search for Harvey Pekar Letterman, a bunch of good stuff comes up. But like you said, he was this guy who was a file clerk from Cleveland, this curmudgeonly, balding guy with like big bushy eyebrows, and he did, in his spare time, did a series of comic books that sort of subsequently became cult favorites called American Splendor. But, you know, he would just kind of needle Dave and, you know, not really give him deference to anything. And there's a, like you alluded to, a famous segment where Harvey, for some reason or another, was ranting about GE and started accusing Dave of being a shill for GE, which owned the network that was airing Dave's show at the time. So, I mean, it just is this kind of exchange that you used to get on Letterman's shows that you just really don't get on TV anymore, that I think is why, you know, for a certain subset of nerds and oddballs like me, you know, Harvey's appearances have become this kind of legendary late-night thing.
Yeah, and your advice is sound. People need to see it because I cannot do it justice. It was just, it was uncomfortable TV, yet it was fascinating at the same time.
And he had this weird squeaky voice, remember? Right. Sort of this like shrill, it just sounded like he was yelling at Dave all the time.
How long was the actual interview, you two?
The total time was about 2.5 hours cut into 2 sessions.
Well, it was a fascinating read. Dave, what's next for you? How do you follow that up?
You know, I'm working on a handful of things. Just did an interview with John Lydon, who, you know, formerly Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols, that'll go up this week. I'm working on another story about the mattress business, which is probably more interesting than people might expect. So I've got some things in the hopper.
Very cool. Hey, David, thanks for hopping on with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time.
All right.
Thanks.
David Marchese, again, the one who did the interview. And when Gardner set it up, I said, one of the things I'm really interested in, how do you go about it? How do you get to Letterman? How do you get him to say yes? Because Bill Murray is famous for, if you want to get a screenplay to him, he has a phone that has an answering machine, but you have to get his publicist. Somebody like has to get to him to agree to give you the number, and then you leave a voicemail with the pitch about what your movie is or whatever, and then you may or may not ever hear back from him. So I thought there was this weird gatekeeper system for Letterman. And then it's just, oh, my editor called over to his publicist. Because as you read the thing, you're like, Dave wanted to talk.
Yes. And also, I think it seemed like Dave was ready to rail on Trump. He probably is not too happy with what's going on and really wanted to have a platform to speak out about it a little bit.
Right. Doing some material on Trumpy, as he called. I would say just check it out just to see the picture. And Charlie, for you, Harvey Pekar was on. You were probably 2 or 3 when he would make these appearances. But he's from Cleveland. And he was a file clerk, but he He had a comic book that got popular, and he would come on, and he would just like rail on Dave and call Dave an idiot. And he was, it's just, it's uncomfortable television, but it is worth checking out.
And I was looking at this website, even back in 2004, it said that Dave taped his 5 shows in 4 days, taped 2 on Thursday. So going back at least, whatever, 12, 13 years, because he wanted to be able to go to Montana and hang out. And so fans that wanted to see the show.
It's only 20 minutes to get there.
What's but fans need? But fans that wanted to see the show loved coming on Thursday because they got a 2-for-1.
I'll be damned.
I actually interviewed to be an intern on the David Letterman
like
show.
Like a page?
And didn't get it. Back in my junior year at Bradley.
See, I thought you were going to say you did get it.
No, I didn't.
It'd be a better story.
I'd have better stories
better
if
story
I did.
Better story if you did.
Fascinating
what was
stuff.
The... What,
the process was so boring and uninteresting. You didn't meet anyone
paperwork.
Famous. You went in there and you met like another intern clerk who interviewed you, and that was all that it was. I actually wanted to be an intern in the summer. They didn't interview me, and the next year they call me in the fall and say, "Do you want to be an intern potentially in the spring?" Which would have been my last year at Bradley. I didn't really want to because I was about to graduate, but I said, if I were to get David Letterman, it's something you can't really
sure.
pass up.
Mom, Dad, I'm leaving school.
Didn't happen, didn't get
did
it.
Did they have a weight room at the late show? Or they
not that funny. But no.
Kind of funny.
I liked from the article, though, that Dave said he loved sparring with Bill O'Reilly. And I thought it was cool because for years, Dave would make fun of Bill O'Reilly. Then he came to respect him, even if they didn't agree on politics. But it was good TV when they talked, in the same way with Dr. Phil. He had for years the segment where he made fun of Dr. Phil, words of wisdom with Dr. Phil. They just played one random comment, and he looked really silly. Then Dr. Phil came on. You could tell that he won Dave over.
And that last visit, which was during the countdown, and that was all 2 years ago, which seems about a year ago. That was 2 years ago, the Letterman farewell, one of the last nights, George Clooney handcuffs himself to Dave, and he says, "You're not going anywhere." But Dr. Phil made one of those final appearances, and he sat down. "Now, hold on, Dave. Butthead, idiot, fatso, buffoon." And he read the whole list. He said, "These are all things you've called me over the years." And then Dave said, "Well, that's not very nice." I tried to be an intern at Channel 5, not as exciting as being an intern for David Letterman, but I thought I had this great in. A friend of mine... is from Iowa, and his dad was buddies with Bill Bolster. Bill Bolster was the general manager at KSDK when they became a powerhouse before the big decline. Kidding, Frank. I'm kidding, of course, kidding. And Bill Bolster went and founded CNBC. So he was a huge deal, went to New York, and he was a big name in the NBC world. But before that, he was at Channel 5. But he was the general manager, okay? He was the Spencer of Channel 5. But my friend's dad says, "Hey, I'll put a call in." And I said, "I just need a summer internship. And, you know, it'd be a great place to do it." So they get me patched through to him. I don't know how I got to the GM. And I'm like, "Hey, my name is Martin Kildorn. And I, Dr. McGarvey said I could call you and we could." He said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And I said, "Oh, well, have you talked to Ava Ehrlich?" Yeah, I sent my paperwork in just like 4,000 other people. "Well, what are you wanting from me?" And, you know, you're just shriveling on the other end of the phone. I'm like 20. And I said, "Well, maybe put a word in or something." "Yeah, all right, well, just see what I can do. Good luck." Never heard back from anybody. You know, the hell with Channel 5. They're dead to me. Years later, Mike Bush is at the press box at the old Bush Stadium. And he said, "Martin, come here. Have you ever met Bill Bolster? He founded CNBC. He's big in New York." And I said, "I do remember you." And I said, "You probably don't remember me. I said, I called you up trying to get an internship." I said, "I was friends with the McGarveys." He goes, "Oh, the McGarveys out of Waterloo, Iowa. I love that family." And I said, "I called you," and I don't expect him to remember. And he said, "What did I say?" And I said, "Well, you were kind of a jerk." And Mike Bush gets uncomfortable. He goes, "That's not a good story. That's not a nice story." And I said, "Well, it's not a nice story, but it's the truth." And that was my run-in with Bill Bolster. Look it up. Huge player in CNBC history.
I will. Now, I didn't get to watch Dave in his early days. You know, I was born in 1982, basically when he started the first show, right? I thought it was interesting, though, that you didn't think he was very political. Now, maybe I'm kind of comparing him to Leno.
Well, in the bulk of his career.
Who wasn't at all. I mean, Leno was 50-50. He was going to make fun of Democrats and Republicans and take no side. When I watched Letterman, I thought it was pretty clear he was a liberal and made it known.
I think at the end, but I think if you watched his show, he had guys with Alka-Seltzer suits jumping in water, stupid pet tricks. I mean, the bulk of the show. Now, his guests, you could tell, I think, when they were the Hollywood liberal type that he kind of commiserated a lot of times with them. So, I mean, I had a sense that he was a liberal, but I didn't think he overdid it. I think towards the end, he became more outspoken about it.
That's fair.
That's fair. And he said he would love to have Trump on the show if he were still doing the show. And they said, well, what would you do? He said, I'd set him straight. And I was just thinking of him interviewing someone like Madonna when she was swearing that up. I love that episode because she was just acting like a loudmouth idiot. And he says, knock it off. Nobody wants to see you talking like this. And the crowd just roared. And instead of her winning over the crowd with her bawdy behavior, Letterman just said, sit down. You're acting like an idiot. Nobody wants to see this. And everybody just went crazy because he put her in her place, which she needed. I don't know how that would go with Trump. But he did indicate in that interview, Trump never was good at giving it back. Like he said, I would always have him on. We'd poke at him. He said he didn't have a good retort.
He's pretty good now, though. Like if you remember the debates going back at Hillary, he's pretty good with some retorts now. The whole thing about
Abraham
Lincoln, Honest Abe, that was a good reply, even if you don't like the guy. The Letterman interview, though, and he alludes to the Paris Hilton appearance. I remember that one. And that was, I felt uncomfortable for her because he was clearly making fun of her so much after she just gets out of jail but doesn't want to talk about it, where Dave says, look, that's all I want to talk about.
And he seems like he feels bad about that one in the interview. He kind of felt bad about it. But he said what would happen is these guests would come on and the publicist would sort of control everything, the topics. And if you didn't play nice, then you didn't get the interview next week. And it was, he said, at a certain point, he said it shifted that they had these publicists who controlled everything. And there's the old joke in the interview business that they would have on the captain of the Titanic, but he didn't want to talk about the crash. And you're like, we had Oz Hakim on Sports Final going into the 2001 season. The 2000 season ended in New Orleans playoff game. He fumbled at the end of the game, and the Saints recovered and the Rams lost. It was the year after the Super Bowl. And so we had him on that show, and the PR guy said, hey, just don't ask him about the fumble. Which, now 5 years from now, yeah, but it was like the beginning of the next season, and he had to kind of live with that the whole offseason. So I brought it up because he had, and it was fine. I mean, it was Colton Wong is what you're thinking, right?
It's funny you say that because
what's the statute of limitations on that poor guy?
Colton Wong getting picked off in the World Series. We bring it up anytime he has a redeeming moment. Like if he has a double in spring training, we say, what's it like to hit that double against the Nats double A pitcher, especially with the fact you got picked off in the World Series 3 years ago?
It became our running joke because, no, he would get asked about it so much. And then he hit the home run in 2014, walk-off winner against the Giants. And he said in the postgame, you know, especially considering last year when I got picked off, and I'm like, okay, you know, it's a year later. It would still come up, and he would even say, like, well, I know that one time I got picked up. Like, stop talking about it. Stop talking about it.
That's actually not the reference I was going to bring up. It happened a couple weeks ago. You were interviewing Gus Frerotte.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You had to bring up the fact that he concussed himself by headbutting the wall.
Well, so, all right, this is an interesting story because Frank had Gus on the radio. And as soon as he was done, Frank read a text that said, you didn't ask him about slamming his head against the wall, which he famously did. It was a Sunday night football game. Scores a touchdown for the Redskins, I believe, and then runs right into the wall and headbutts and gives himself, I think, a concussion. He got injured. And to me, then we had him in TV a couple days after Frank talked to him. I brought it up in part because his whole thing now is about protecting your brain. To me, it's if he was in town and just, you know, hey, I bought a circus and they're playing, it wouldn't be a topic. If he's just in town playing in the local pro-am talking football, it wouldn't be a topic. But because he's all about protecting your brain and head injuries, and I thought it fit. So I brought it up, and I could tell on the – we taped it. I could tell on the set that he kind of winced. And like he said, oh, you had to bring that up. Well, that was a long time ago, and I tell my kids, don't do like Dad. So when it ended, the taping, it was really – he's great. He's fine. But it's over. I said, I'm sorry. I thought it was appropriate. He goes, no, you know what? He said, I've heard so much blank my whole life. He said, doesn't matter, whatever. It clearly bothered him.
He needs to embrace that, though.
But
he could get a commercial out of that.
But don't you think it fits because of what he is promoting and his product that he's all about is with head, brain activity, the health of your brain, and he is most famous for smashing his head against the wall I think because of that, it wasn't rude to bring it up.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So we edited it out because I thought, in fairness to him, if it bothers him, I don't care. If it was an unbelievable answer, we'd keep it in there. But it clearly bothered him.
Can't you see Gus Frerotte, though, doing a commercial right now for Tylenol or Advil, making a nice six-figure check or more to do a commercial where they show that clip and he, you know, takes his Advil to get rid of his headache?
Or for his current company. Yes. And then holds up like the Fitbit thing that they're doing and says, you could check your brain status right after this happens. I wish I would have done it beforehand. Then I probably wouldn't have. Yeah, you're right.
Have some fun with it.
I think he has, but it's been 20 years and he thought he had moved past it.
We do that in the media, though. Whenever you do a long form interview, like let's say a 10, 12 minute interview, you kind of feel the need to like hit the Wikipedia highlights and you always go to basically like the best moment and then also the worst moment.
When Mike Leake got signed last year, one of the questions that came up at the Mike Leake press conference wasn't about, hey, you're a right-hander pitching at this ballpark, joining this. What do you know about Matheny and the Cardinals? You had all those days with the Reds. He was asked, you're right, it's sort of, they've gone through the interview process to get a job, and then they get in front of the media and it's like, all right, 2010, you were arrested for shoplifting, yet you were a big league pitcher. He had to explain that he grabbed some shirts and then put them back or whatever the hell happened. I wasn't there that day, but I read it the next day. I'm like, oh, my God, they brought that up. That's why they hate us.
Don't you think, wasn't that very interesting to know that? I did not know, because when I heard that when he was a Red, I thought, here's a guy who was a first-round pick from Arizona State. Why the hell is he shoplifting, whatever, $80 worth of shirts? It seemed crazy.
You were thinking...
I thought he just grabbed them.
Who's the girl, the actress that was real popular for a while?
Reality Bites.
No,
that
Winona Ryder?
Winona Ryder.
And it was kind of a kleptomaniac, right? It was just kind of her thing. She would grab stuff at stores.
So it actually makes much more sense that it seemed like, and I'm paraphrasing, that Mike Leake had the shirts, went in there, I believe saw a long line, and just traded the shirts out without going through the process at the register. So it's not as bad
as it sounded.
As we all thought it was.
So maybe in the media's defense, it was helpful.
Correct.
Instead of what you had in your head, as you always thought was the story, now you have some clarification. So when Charlie interviews for ESPN in like 5 years, and they're like, all right, it seems like everybody likes you. You seem like a nice kid. Did you really have a thing where you like to work out with high school kids? It says here, I mean, and you could clarify.
We should sponsor that.
The high school gym of the week.
Hey, Gold's Gym. I've been trying to talk to him. It's going to be right by the new studio. Gold's Gym, if you're interested. Just saying.
Gold's Gym. It's as nice as your gym weight room that you had in high school.
Absolutely.
There you go. There's your tagline. All right, a quick break here. Darren Pang in just a little bit talking to Blues Hockey after the 2-1 win, nearly a 2-0 win. The shutout streak ended, but Jake Allen has been much better. What's the difference? I don't know. Darren Pang can answer that question. And the Blues are back home Friday and Saturday. It's the Midday Grind. You can be part of the conversation. Text in at 855-282-8255 right here on 590 The Fan.
Saying, give thanks and praise to the Lord, and I will feel.